I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. Happy Friday, everyone. Okay, on my top 10 movie list of all time, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
It's a dark comedy about an American general who goes rogue and starts a nuclear holocaust. Pure Cold War gold. One would hope that, though, with the end of the Cold War and all, we'd be all done with the debate on nuclear weapons. But here we are.
Russia has jeopardized the United States security interest.
That's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaking this morning. He's talking about nuclear missiles, short-range ones. Russia has them, and Pompeo says that's a violation of a Cold War treaty on intermediate nuclear forces, the INF.
We provided Russia an ample window of time to mend its ways and for Russia to honor its commitment. Tomorrow that time runs out. Russia has refused to take any steps to return real and verifiable compliance. The United States will therefore suspend its obligations under the INF treaty effective February 2nd.
Yes, unless Russia changes course, the U.S. is going to pull out of the INF treaty. Nuclear experts disagree about whether this is a good thing or not. So we've got two of them with us to explain, Heather Hurlburt with the think tank New America and Rebecca Heinrichs from the Hudson Institute. Let me start with you, Heather. What is an intermediate nuclear missile, first of all, and why was the INF treaty seen as a good thing when it was signed in 1987?
Intermediate nuclear missiles deliver a nuclear warhead between 300 and 1300 miles, which means that either the US or Russia can fire them and hit Europe, but not each other. And that was seen as very destabilizing during the Cold War. And for that reason, the US and then the Soviet Union, with strong support from our NATO allies and also, interestingly, from some of our Asian allies, such as Japan, agreed never to produce or use those missiles. Now, that's 30 years ago. This happened under Reagan and Gorbachev. The Russians, there's no question, I'm sure Rebecca and I both agree, have been violating this treaty. There remain many of our European allies, as well as Japan, who are just as comfortable with the U.S. not producing and not using them. So it's on the one hand, a recognition of reality that the Russians are producing these missiles. It's also potentially a quite destabilizing step in Europe and elsewhere around the world.
So, Rebecca Heinrichs, make the case for getting out of the INF.
Sure. So the INF treaty prohibits the conventional INF range missiles as well. And we have seen that not only have the Russians been testing this particular category of weapons in violation of the treaty, and so the question before the United States has been, how long do we continue to pressure the Russians to comply with the treaty? Because this is a bilateral treaty. It's the United States and the Russians that are party to the treaty. No other country is party to the treaty. No other country is constrained to develop this particular category of weapons, and so other countries have been doing so. And so now the Obama administration, to their credit, continued to pressure the Russians to comply with the treaty. They were unable to do so. The Trump administration repeatedly initiated consultations with the Russians to point out the violations. The Russians obfuscated and denied and lied about what they were doing and accused the United States in bad faith of violating the treaty. And so the United States worked with our NATO allies to show them that they were in violation. NATO agrees with the United States, and so the clock has run out.
So, Rebecca, you support this move?
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, we have across two administrations pressuring the Russians to comply. They have not. So at some point, your patience runs out. I mean, it's a treaty that at this point is only effectively constraining the United States. We are not developing, we're not deploying, we're not testing this particular category of weapons. And so it's essentially tying our own hands behind our back while the Russians outright violate it.
So, Heather, what alternatives does the U.S. have right now?
Well, I do agree absolutely with Rebecca that we are at the dawn of a new missile age, and I draw pretty different conclusions from that. Because remember, the reason that these missiles were considered destabilizing, they go shorter distances, they take less time. You have less time as a leader to respond, to decide, is that a nuclear or conventional missile coming at me? How should I respond? Should I should I unleash the full force of my nuclear force in response? Now, the more countries build up forces of that size, the more we all face that dilemma. When you add to it now the ability to produce conventional or nuclear hypersonic missiles that mimic the speed of long-range nuclear missiles, you are looking at a future in which leaders have to make decisions about the use of nuclear forces in less time than it takes the president to write a tweet. And if that seems like a future you want to encourage, then yes, absolutely, you should develop more of these things. So there is absolutely a need for rethinking what does a nuclear force look like in an era where there's so much fast conventional missile technology. But it's not at all clear that the answer to that is, oh, we need to have a lot more.
So a final short question for both of you. With the U.S. out of the INF Treaty, how scared should we be on a scale of 0 to 10? Heather?
Well, I'll answer that by just picking right up where Rebecca left off, actually, because this week of all weeks, it was announced that the U.S. has actually started producing small, quote-unquote, limited nuclear weapons, which is astonishing to me for all the reasons Rebecca rattled off. We shouldn't be encouraging the idea that you could use a small nuclear weapon on a battlefield and live to fight another day, but that is exactly what the administration is doing. At the same time, taking away one of the last kind of pillars that was not just a bilateral treaty between the U.S. and then the Soviet Union, but also an indication to the rest of the world that we were serious about limiting, constraining, and ultimately reducing everybody's nuclear arsenals. And the sort of disappearance of that international architecture, which was not just about whether the two countries involved were complying, but the signal that it sent to everyone else who's ever thought about having a nuclear weapon, that makes me more worried, you know, this week than I was last week.
So about a 7 out of 10?
Well, you know, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists has just moved their clock to 2 minutes to midnight, the closest to midnight it's ever been in the history of nuclear weapons. So the folks who do this full time think you should be very concerned.
Rebecca, what about you on a scale of 0 to 10 in terms of scared?
Well, I don't worry about. I don't think that worrying will do any good. So I would recommend your listeners not to worry at all. But I do think that, again, I'm very encouraged that the United States is working with our NATO allies to come up with efforts and initiatives to prepare us to deter a revanchist Russia and China, depending on what issue we're talking about. What you want to do is make sure that we are raising the credibility of deterrence so that war never breaks out to begin with. So we don't want to get into exchange, but in the event that deterrence does fail, the United States should be prepared to win that fight and mitigate the damage done by our adversaries. And so the best way to prevent war is to be fully prepared for it, to disincentivize our adversaries from inviting it to begin with.
We are going to leave it there. Rebecca Heinrichs at the Hudson Institute and Heather Hurlburt at New America. Thank you both very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
For a closer look at whether stepping out of the INF Treaty could lead to an arms race, go to theworld.org.